Thomas and the Warrior Mouse, written by Patrick M. Dalabetta, narrated by Don Dorsey. The day was especially hard for Thomas Poliwatewa. He tried to do well in school, but never seemed to satisfy his teacher, Lottie Kissinger. Thomas found it difficult to concentrate and keep from moving at his desk or around the room. Although he tried hard at his studies, he was clearly not successful, at least in the eyes of his teacher. So he is back to that tiny little room, away from the other children. Thomas's school is located just off Hopi lands inside the Navajo Reservation in northern Arizona. The daily trip from his home on the second mesa takes at least an hour. To Thomas, the trip was beautiful. He enjoyed the travel to school as the wagon moved from the cedar trees on the mesa to the grass and sage-covered deserts below. The view was spectacular, especially as he moved down from the high ground of his home. Colors were vivid, from greens to purples to browns to the blues and whites of beautiful clouds. He went to school with his friend Joseph, the only other Hopi in the classroom. Thomas's father drove the boys to school several days each week in their wagon that was surprisingly smooth. His father had added truck tires on the wagon, making the many bumps on the old road more comfortable. The other days, Thomas and Joseph had fun riding their horses to school. During school, Thomas's grandfather, Jimmy Poliwatewa, who he called Trapa, would sell and trade for goods in the larger Navajo settlement in Tuba City on the Navajo Reservation. He sold or traded pottery, beaded necklaces, and especially eggs from his chickens, his most popular sales commodity. The second mesa eggs were very special. They were very big, colorful, and regarded highly by the Navajo people. In school, the other students liked Thomas, and he was very popular. Unlike his teacher, the children laughed and smiled whenever he spoke in class. They liked hanging with Thomas on recess breaks. He was glad he was accepted by the other students, but somehow felt he was different. It turns out he was different, but in a very special way. He thought maybe he was different because he was only one of two Hopi students in the school of mostly Navajo children. But all the children liked Thomas because he was so fun, even when he tried being serious. He always shared anything he had and was always kind to the other children. Everyone knew Thomas was very special, except his teacher. It seemed Thomas could not do anything to make Lottie Kissinger happy. She yelled at Thomas a lot, which quickly quieted any classroom laughter and noise. Thomas knew his teacher must be lonely, and felt bad because she didn't have any friends or relatives. Perhaps that was why she was so unhappy. Thomas had many friends, and he thought that might be why she didn't seem to like him. He never got good grades, but it didn't matter, even though he tried to do well in school. His teacher lived by herself in a small house in back of the school. She never had visitors and rode into town with one of the villagers once a month for provisions. The ride was very rough in wagons across the main road, up to the sacred San Francisco peaks, and into Flagstaff, the biggest city close to the Hopi and Navajo reservations. The main road had recently been paved, but wagon travel was hard unless you had a truck, something new to everyone at the time. Very few people on either reservation had a car or truck. Most had wagons that were pulled by horses or mules. Thomas's family never came to the school. They avoided the teacher because she was not popular with most of the families in the villages near the school. At that time in history, native children were often forced by the government to attend white schools. The Bureau of Indian Affairs policy was to wean the Indian youth from a primitive life, just one more government action to control the native indigenous people. But Thomas's parents hoped he would benefit from the Cachada, or white man's education and language. The Hopi people, and especially his family, place great importance on education. Thomas couldn't even remember how much time he spent in that tiny little room. Lottie Kissinger called it a time-out place. Thomas didn't mind so much about the many hours he spent there. It actually gave him a reprieve from his usual troubles in the classroom. He didn't have to worry about his studies or his teacher, who locked the door so Thomas couldn't be with the other students. One tiny window to the outside helped Thomas pass the time. He stared out the tiny window, sometimes for hours. Thomas was often sent there, but he never understood why he had to spend so much time in that tiny box-like room. It was really small, had no light except for the window facing the mesas to the north of the school. Thomas passed the hours staring at the beautiful scenery. He could see as far as second mesa in the distance where he lived in the tiny village of Mishongnovi. The colors were vivid, reds, purples, and reds, especially when the sun shone brightly through the clouds. Thomas could see the distant green vegetation at the bottom of the mesa. He longed for the weekends where he could swim in the ponds and eat apples or peaches from the trees below the mesa. You see, Thomas was a very special boy. While he didn't do well in the school, his classmates and everyone living on Third Mesa loved and respected him. He always helped others and did his best to please his parents, who knew little of his troubles at school. But that was not what made him special. The villagers also considered him special, perhaps even magical, with special powers because of his relationship with his best friend, a small field mouse named Tusan Homichi Tuvota. The two met on a snake hunt with his grandfather. His trapa was the village chief and lead most of the snake hunts. Small desert rattlesnakes, bull snakes, and ribbon snakes were an important part of the sacred snake dance and Chutiva ceremony of the Hopi people. Thus, it was important to gather snakes for the snake ceremony that was meant to help bring spring rains to Hopi land. The hunts only happened a couple times a year. Thomas knew he was lucky to be able to go on the snake hunts with his trapa and was often the youngest in the hunting group. During one particular hunt, a tiny field mouse ran up Thomas's pants to escape the wrath of a rather large rattlesnake. The mouse knew he was a favorite delicacy of snakes. The presence of the mouse did not bother Thomas, who kept him as a pet. He named his new friend Tusan, who became more than a pet. He became Thomas's best friend. They were inseparable, and everyone in the village never saw one without the other. Perhaps it was because animals, in the Native American traditions, represent the values and spiritual beliefs of the Hopi people. Thomas sneaked Tusan to school in his coat pocket, and Tusan helped him pass the time spent in that little time-out room. Tusan squeaked and was quite noisy when Thomas got into trouble with his teacher. It was all Thomas could do to keep his friend quiet and avoid additional rancor from Lottie Kissinger. Tusan loved his best friend and didn't fully understand the teacher's chiding. His field mouse loved Thomas a lot and enjoyed being with this friend, even in the timeout room. Thomas's problems became Tucson's problems, and they were one. You see, this story is amazing since Thomas and Tusan really could talk to each other. Maybe this is hard to believe, but it was true. Tiny Tusan did tricks Thomas taught him and loved performing for the villagers. Although the other children seemed a little jealous of Thomas's talent and his tiny mouse, they were amazed at the relationship. Their respect for Thomas and his mouse friend grew each day. None of Thomas's friends understood the squeaks and noises the mouse made, but Thomas clearly understood his best friend. Many people in the village began to think Thomas and his best friend could actually talk to each other, something very magical, perhaps a gift of Chokmingwu, the corn mother. All of the villagers knew and loved Thomas and Tusan. The Hopi culture and people are organized into groups called clans, and Thomas's clan mostly lived on Second Mesa. The Hopi people are, by nature, very peaceful and never aggressive, like some of the other Native American tribes. The word Hopi actually means one who is mannered, peaceable, polite, and live by the Hopi way. Thomas always made sure Tusan was well-fed with corn and beans. Tusan had his own kiva, situated close to Thomas's house, but in the open and closer to the side of the mesa. Although kivas are normally only ceremonial houses, Tusan used his tiny kiva to think and pray during the few times he wasn't with his best friend. It happened that Thomas even helped build the mouse kiva. In a practical sense, Tusan was an honorary member of Thomas's snake clan, a situation he and the other clan members readily accepted. Although a tiny kiva, the villagers respected Tusan's kiva and were careful not to disturb the dwelling. Kivas are always very special places where ceremonies are held. It was protected not only because a kiva is sacred, but also because they came to respect Tusan as much as his best friend Thomas. Kivas are round or square, one-room structures built into the ground. Tusan's kiva was constructed of clay dirt and straw. Each square kiva has only one entrance and contains a sipapu, the Hopi word for a small hole or indentation in the center floor. Tusan's kiva was simple and had a small hole in the ceiling for ventilation. Entrance to his kiva was also very small, only big enough for Tusan. Sometimes the village elders entered their kivas through a hole in the roof with a ladder. Tusan could enter through an opening on the side of his kiva. Tusan spent time in his small kiva when Thomas was hunting with his father. Although the best friend any boy could have, Toussaint was very timid and extremely afraid of snakes, and for that matter, birds of prey, coyotes, or any other mouse-eating creatures. That is the reason Toussaint never accompanied Thomas on the snake hunts. Although outgoing by nature, he relied on Thomas for protection. He slept with Thomas under a blanket in bed at night. Thomas kept Toussaint close and safe from the bull snakes that were common in the village. He kept his friend in his pocket, and they were always together. This was a very special and happy time for the people of Missiongnovi. They were happy because they had plenty of food. The storerooms in their houses were filled with all kinds of food from their gardens. They had corn, beans, melons, and squash. They even had apples, apricots, and peaches, one of Thomas's favorites. He and Toussaint eagerly waited for every weekend when they spent many hours swimming in the ponds below the mesas. They enjoyed helping weed the gardens for the villagers, and always willing to help harvest vegetables. Thomas was a kind young boy who always helped with chores in his house and village. He played and worked hard, always with his best friend Toussaint. Thomas sometimes stopped to show off his best friend. He would hold Toussaint in his hand and ask him to say hi to his audience. The mouse would squeak, dance, and even seem to smile on cue by Thomas. People loved the performances, but didn't know how or why both Thomas and Toussaint could communicate. It is true that Toussaint was really as human as his best friend Thomas. The Missiongnovi villagers had plenty of food from their gardens. Most importantly, they had many chickens that provided eggs, food, and even feathers for their beds. Chickens were the most prized possession of the villagers. The number of chickens the Missiongnovi villagers had made them rich in the eyes of their Navajo neighbors. Many Hopi artists sold their works to the trading posts and to the few tourists that visited the reservation. Some of the Hopi artists made wonderful pottery or kachina dolls carved from the wood roots of the cottonwood trees. They sold vegetables, fruit, and especially eggs, most often to their Navajo neighbors, whose reservation surrounded the smaller Hopi reservation. Thomas even went out of his way to be nice to Lottie Kissinger by taking her eggs whenever his family had more than they needed. She would eagerly accept the gift, but never smiled or said much other than to mutter, "Thank you, Wikvaya, one who brings." You see that with all her efforts to educate Indian children in an unpleasant and demanding way, she was one of the first Kachada, white people, to try to create some written version of the Hopi and Navajo languages. She knew enough of the Hopi and Navajo language to survive, even though she couldn't seem to improve her poor relationship with the villagers. All in all, life was great for Thomas and Toussaint, and other than his time spent in the time-out room, they were very happy. Life was also great for the Missiongnovi villagers who were so rich with their many chickens. However, his grandfather, Trapa Jimmy Poliwetewa, was worried in spite of the current good life. He was concerned that the villagers were too satisfied with their good life and would lose sight of the importance to work hard, even in the good times. Would his people get too fat and lazy and not be able to deal with more difficult times? Unfortunately, the villagers were about to face a great challenge. Strangely, the Missiongnovi villagers began to slowly, one by one, lose their chickens. Nobody understood how that could happen. Day after day, their population of chickens dwindled. They became very worried, and the problem grew more serious each day. Thomas was also troubled by the problem, but like the other villagers, didn't understand how his people could lose so many of their prized possessions. Why was their good life changing, and what was happening to their chickens? What would they do without their chickens? The most amazing thing about this story is that Thomas and Toussaint could actually talk to each other. One day, he and Toussaint were talking about the problem down by the pond below the mesa. Although Thomas didn't understand why this was happening, his tiny friend Toussaint knew. "One morning outside my kiva, I thought I was going to die. A huge red hawk flew over me so close I thought I was going to be his dinner. That hawk has killed many of my family, but that day he showed no interest in me. He swooped over me and grabbed one of the hens. The hawk is killing the village chickens." Both knew something had to be done to solve this huge problem. At that time, smoking by the Hopi males was done during ceremonies or meetings with his trapa, the village chief. The Hopis smoked kinnikinnik, a mixture of tobacco and other herbs, bark, and plant matter traded from the white people in Flagstaff. Smoking to the elders in the village was medicinal and helped with different ailments. It helped the elders when important decisions were to be made. The sharing of a smoke pipe was a sign of hospitality, so everyone in meetings shared the smoke pipe. The elders knew their smoking was spiritual. Perhaps such meetings would help the villagers decide how to resolve the situation and loss of their prized chickens. Many meetings were held, but the villagers could not decide what to do or why the chickens were slowly disappearing. Everyone was upset and prayed for an answer. Although nobody understood the cause of the problem, both Thomas and Tuzin knew about the angry hawk chicken thief. Few people would pay attention to a young boy in such a troubling time. Village elders rarely listened to children because the village chief and the male elders were responsible to decide what to do. Thomas and Tuzin were also sad. They decided to tell his trapa what they knew. From the entrance to the kiva, Thomas called to his grandfather, "Trapa, I know about the problem with our chickens, so please let us talk to you." After a minute, he heard his grandfather, "Thomas, you are old enough now, so you may enter." Now it so happened that Thomas's grandfather was a very wise man. He knew more than anyone of the special relationship between his grandson and his friend Tuzin. Amazingly, he also knew Thomas and Tuzin could actually talk to each other, but never said anything to anyone. He knew his grandson was very special. He spoke to Thomas and Tuzin, who emerged from Herman's jacket pocket. "We must smoke before we talk." Trapa offered both a small pipe, and they began to smoke and prepare for the conversation, even though Tuzin had a little trouble smoking from the pipe because of his size. It was funny to hear a mouse cough, but this was serious. "Tuzin Homichi Tuvota, you must talk to us as you talk to my grandson. You must talk to all the Hopi villagers so they know you are also wise." He blessed Tuzin using a greasewood stick with eagle feathers tied at the end. Smoke seemed to circle Tuzin, and he felt different, more at ease and calm in nature. He also felt more human. "But why are you and Thomas here?" Although hard to believe, it was true that Tuzin began to speak the Hopi language with clarity. "Chief Poliwetewa, we know what is happening to the chickens," said Tuzin. "They are being killed by a huge hawk that lives on Corn Rock." "It is a good thing that you give me this information," replied Trapa. "We must tell all the people in the village and rid the village of the hawk." With that, his grandfather led the two out of the kiva. Trapa summoned the town crier to assemble the people to the center of the village. He asked Thomas and Tuzin to stand on a crude wooden platform and tell the villagers what they knew. As directed, Tuzin spoke first, surprising the villagers. His small but clear voice silenced any noise and talk in the crowd. "Mama, the mouse can talk," said one of the small children. The villagers were stunned. Although this was a great surprise to the villagers, everyone already knew Tuzin and his friend Thomas were very special. They accepted his words and listened carefully. Tuzin said to the people, "The big mean hawk that lives on Corn Rock is stealing and eating your chickens." Thomas told the people that they could solve the chicken problem by killing the hawk. He told them that the hawk almost killed his friend Tuzin, and that he would help them rid the village of the pillaging hawk. "You need to decide how to kill the hawk." With that, the crowd slowly left to their homes to think and pray about the problem, except the children who wanted to talk to the mouse. Now you must understand that while Tuzin was a special mouse, he was timid and afraid because he was so small. He was nervous around so many people who could easily step on him. Tuzin was deadly afraid of snakes, and even worse, all birds of prey, especially hawks. Tuzin remembered all of his family killed by the hawk. He told Thomas, "I am glad we could help the villagers by telling them about the hawk, but I don't know how they will kill him. I am afraid and sorry I cannot help." Thomas told Tuzin, "The elders will solve the problem, and we should not have to worry about helping." All of the people in Mishongnovi were troubled about the hawk. They talked and prayed and knew something had to be done. All the villagers wanted the hawk gone, but no one knew how. It turns out that the men in the village tried and tried, but had no success in efforts to rid the village of the big mean hawk. It seems like many days went by, and the problem got no better. They continued to lose chicken after chicken. All of the villagers were very sad. Neither Thomas nor Tuzin knew what to do. It had been many days since they told the villagers about the hawk, yet even with repeated tries, nobody could kill the hawk. Thomas had no idea what would happen to the village if they didn't deal with the hawk. He was too young and had no skills that could help. He had just been given his first bow and arrow, and needed a lot of time to master the skill of hunting. Tuzin also felt terrible, but But what could he do, for he was only a tiny little mouse? Besides, he was afraid the hawk would kill him like the rest of his family. Moreover, he was not brave enough to help. Tucson felt particularly bad about the hawk. He knew both he and Thomas did not have the ability to help. After much talk, Tucson left Thomas and went to his kiva to think and pray. In the kiva, he smoked his tiny pipe, thought and prayed for hours. During his prayers, the smoke from his pipe swept around him. Something really strange happened. The smoke surrounded him and seemed to sweep his fears up and out of his body and kiva. The more he smoked and prayed, the more he knew he had to help the people of Mishongnovi. Suddenly and magically, he knew what he had to do. Perhaps he became Tuata, one who sees magic. Tucson decided to risk his life for the villagers and his clan. His thoughts cleared, and he created a plan to kill the hawk. There was little chance it would work, but he knew he had to be brave and fight for the clan and all of the people in the village. His life was less important than the happiness of the people, and especially his best friend Thomas. That night in bed with his best friend Thomas, Tucson shared his idea to fight the hawk. This upset Thomas, who never wanted Tucson to risk his life. He told his friend, "You are nothing but a tiny little field mouse. You will be killed, and I can't lose my best friend." Nonetheless, Tucson asked Thomas for help with his plan. While he shared no details, he asked Thomas to go with him to meet with his trapa. The next morning, Tucson left with his friend to visit Thomas's trapa, the village chief. He knocked on his door and Trapa said, "Come in, my friend," although he was surprised to see his tiny visitor. Trapa told Tucson that before they talked, they had to eat. He fed Thomas and Tucson a meal of tosi, sweet cornmeal, and boiled beans. After the two had eaten, Trapa moved toward the wall and said, "I guess you had some reason for coming here." "Yes, but first we need to smoke," said the mouse. Tucson took out his own tiny tobacco pouch and pipe and lighted it. He took some puffs and then handed his small pipe to the chief. After smoking, Tucson told Trapa that he felt sorry for the Mishongnovi people because they were losing their chickens. After a moment of silence, Tucson said, "I shall do something for you. I shall try to kill the hawk. Please ask the village crier to assemble all of the village people. Tell the villagers I will kill the hawk early in the morning on the fourth day of a celebration." The chief appreciated Tucson's hope to kill the hawk because no other elders were able to do so. He had little faith that the little mouse could accomplish such an enormous task. The mouse was so small, he had no chance with the hawk. Even though he doubted Tucson's plans, he went outside and summoned the village crier. The crier offered the chief some food, but he was too full to eat. Trapa informed the crier of Tucson's plan to battle the hawk. Both knew that the mouse had no chance, especially since efforts to kill the hawk by other men in the village had not been successful. Although many had tried, nobody had even been able to get close to the hawk. Trapa told the crier to announce Tucson's plans to the villagers the next morning. The crier did so and announced to all the people in the village that Tucson had set a date for the battle with the big mean hawk. "The great event will take place in 4 days. The third day will be Tokya, Hopi ceremonial dance, and the battle will take place on the morning of the fourth day. On that day, Tucson, the warrior mouse, will kill the enemy." It was logical that the villagers thought the whole idea was laughable. Tucson was only a little mouse living on the edge of the mesa. He must be crazy to try to kill the hawk. Some even thought the crier was crazy to even set a date for the battle. Thomas knew his best friend was serious, but wondered how he could have become so brave as to even attempt such a feat. That night, Thomas tried to talk Tucson out of his plan to battle the hawk. He told his best friend he was proud of him, but didn't want him to try such a battle. "Tucson, even our best hunters were unsuccessful in dealing with the hawk. Please don't even think about any plan." Tucson told his friend that he had a good plan. "Everybody should watch the battle. The villagers can help by preparing the Tokyo celebration. They should assemble on the chosen morning and pray for me." On the third day during the Tokyo, Tucson was busy in his kiva. He took a straight branch from a greasewood plant and used his tiny knife to sharpen its end. He made the point very sharp. After that, he began to dig a tunnel from his kiva under the ground, a distance from his kiva. At the end of the tunnel outside his kiva, he made a very small opening to the surface. He used leaves to hide the opening. Digging the tunnel and getting ready for the battle was a huge task that took almost all night. He needed to be careful with every detail. After he was done, he smoked and went outside to look at the stars. He prayed for protection and for the bravery he needed to fight the huge mean hawk. He also prayed for his best friend Thomas. After his short stay outside, Tucson went inside and began to prepare for the battle. He took out his feathers and paint and other things to dress for battle. On the top of his head, he tied feathers from an eagle's wing with downy feathers from an eagle's breast. Eagle feathers were very important to all of the Hopi people and Tucson. In the culture, Hopi eagles are Gapasoghiu. Eagles are human beings in another form. Tucson hoped the eagle spirit would accompany him in battle and help him be brave. Then he put white clay paint on his cheeks and right side of his forehead. He also painted his arms and chest. He put on his kilt and tied ocean shells around his right wrist. Last of all, he got his tiny bow and war club, something that Thomas had helped him build, though Thomas never thought Tucson would actually ever use them. When Tucson was finished, he took off his moccasins and sat down to think about a war chant. Even though just a tiny field mouse, Tucson felt like a great warrior and was ready for battle. He prayed he would have the courage to execute his battle plan. Now it happened that the planned battle was a great event that drew many people from his village and neighboring villages in both first and third mesas. People dressed their children in new clothes, and the men donned their silver belts and turquoise necklaces. The women wore their bracelets and rings of silver and turquoise with their brightest shawls. Others came to second mesa with their horses, donkeys, and wagons. The villagers all dressed up, some even coming from below the mesa because they wanted to see the talking mouse. Why had Tucson announced the event knowing he could be killed? The event was almost a party with many people eating piki, a finely ground blue corn, and water with juniper ashes cooked on a flat cooking stone. While most people were excited to watch the battle and the mouse that could talk, some were angry and thought the whole event was stupid. How could a small mouse take on a huge hawk? They were a little upset because of time it took the villagers to prepare for the week of activities prior to the battle. They thought the whole event foolish and laughed at those who took the event seriously. But many wondered if the mouse had some special power. To add to the crowd frustrations, they never saw Tucson until almost noon, the morning of the battle. All of the people surrounded the tiny kiva to watch. Tucson finally emerged from his kiva, and the villagers saw that he was about to start a war dance. When everyone watched Tucson, some laughed because he was dressed like a real warrior. Now it is easy to see why people thought the whole situation was nothing more than a comedy, a show that would only entertain the audience. It is rare that any Hopi went to war, as they are one of the most peaceful tribes in America. Thomas was the most nervous of all the observers. He never wanted his best friend to risk his life, even for such a good cause. However, Thomas knew Tucson was very smart. Trapa was seated next to his grandson Thomas and had to hold him from running to help his friend. Tucson is smart, my grandson. He is brave and a true warrior. Sometimes warriors lose a battle, but they will never lose their bravery. The battle was about to begin. Tucson came out and started a war dance in front of his kiva. As he danced, he began to chant in Hopi language. The hawk kills chickens. The hawk kills rabbits. But the hawk won't kill Tucson Homichi in battle. Monster Hawk will surely die. As he danced, he lifted his bow in his left hand and lifted his war club in his right hand each time before he started his chanting song. He continued his chant and war dance. The villagers watched carefully, enjoying the show if nothing else. Now, as it happened, the big hawk was watching from Corn Rock. Not only was he watching Tucson, but listening to the chant. When he heard Tucson's words and dance, he became very angry. The more Tucson danced and chanted, the hawk's anger grew. That mouse is making fun of me, thought the hawk. Finally, not wishing to be taunted anymore, he took flight and swooped down to dig his talons into that foolish little mouse. He wanted to kill Tucson and kill him, with no mercy in front of all of the villagers. Just before the hawk was to grab the tiny warrior, Tucson ducked into his kiva. The hawk flew back onto his rock and watched. Tucson came out again and began his war dance and chant. He wanted to anger the hawk, but danced a little further from his kiva. Again the hawk came down but missed his target, as Tucson again dashed into his kiva. Every time Tuzen came out, he danced further and further away from the entrance to his kiva. The hawk kept trying to grab Tuzen but failed, each time getting closer and closer. Tuzen was getting more and more courageous with his dances, moving further away from his kiva. The hawk didn't know that Tuzen was also getting closer to the entrance to the tunnel he had dug the previous night. The villagers knew the hawk was about to kill Tuzen, as he was too far away from his kiva to survive. They had no idea the brave warrior mouse had an escape route. All of a sudden, Thomas remembered what Tuzen had planned. The brave mouse warrior had stuck his sharp greasewood spear through the ground, right next to the entrance to the tunnel, far away from his kiva. Thomas realized his best friend was baiting the hawk. The next attempt to get Tuzen was very close to the entrance of the tunnel. The hawk even managed to graze the fur on Tuzen's back. The talons of a predator, especially one so big, are deadly. The villagers gasped and yelled to Tuzen to stop his dance and run. Not a chance, thought both Tuzen and Thomas. One more attempt by the hawk! The last flight by the hawk was aimed directly at Tuzen. Surely this was not going to be a happy ending. But suddenly something happened. Just as the hawk was to grab Tuzen, the brave warrior mouse ducked into the entrance to the tunnel. The mean hawk missed the warrior and impaled himself on the greasewood spear, pointed in the direction of the hawk. The hawk's death was quick. His death came after a few last flaps of his wings and one last hawk screech. The villagers gasped. They were silent and in awe, trying to grasp what had just happened. Then the screams erupted and the villagers jumped and danced as the hawk was stuck lifeless to the greasewood spear. As the hawk died, Tuzen gave the loudest war cry he could muster, raising his arms in victory. He danced and yelled for another few minutes. The many village witnesses could not believe what they had just seen. They yelled and screamed for Tuzen and were very happy. Jimmy Poliwetewa was proud of his grandson Thomas, and especially his best friend Tuzen Homichi Tuvota. "You have made our village safe, something none of us could do. The Hopi Nation will forever talk about your battle." In the weeks following the battle, the people of Mishongovi showered both Tuzen and his best friend Thomas with lots of food and gifts. They gave them pika and all other kinds of food, including Thomas's favorite apples and peaches. The most interesting thing happened 2 days later when Thomas showed up to school. Lottie Kissinger met him at the classroom door with a big smile, something quite different. "I know you have Tuzen in your pocket, Thomas." The boy, expecting to be chastised, opened his pocket and asked his mouse friend to come out. Poor Tuzen was as afraid as the night before his battle. Looking up, both the friends heard the teacher say, "Both you and Tuzen are welcome in my classroom, Thomas." From that point, both friends had a good life, and Thomas even did well in school.
This has been Thomas and the Warrior Mouse, written by Patrick M. Dalabetta, narrated by Don Dorsey.